from Storyflow. This is your daily audio brief. Hey, it's Chloe. August 14th. 10 stories, 1 trial, 3 reviews, 6 takes you can actually use. Let's get into it. First, from Flavor Spiel, The Art of Simple Recipes, Spaghetti alla Nerano. Sometimes the most beautiful dishes are the simplest ones. Spaghetti alla Nerano is the perfect example. No complicated sauces, no long ingredient list. Just fresh zucchini, delicate squash blossoms, garlic, olive oil, basil, lemon, cheese, and pas. Each ingredient allowed to shine exactly as it should. I came home from a trip to Italy thinking about tea next. Second, from Tell Me Three Good Things, 13 August 2020, 6 till the Three Good Things. Hey, I wanted to share some thoughts on this article I read. It's about how we interact with others, especially when things don't go as planned. The author suggests that we often make assumptions about people, like the waiter at a restaurant, and that instead of judging them, we should try to see them as fellow humans who might be struggling with their own challenges. It's about practicing empathy and understanding and being more aware of our shared humanity. This practice of sharing good things, like the author does in their newsletter, is also a way to see each other more clearly. It's a way to connect with others and appreciate the small joys in life, like clean sheets or a good book. The article mentions that even though we're all different, we're also more similar than we think, and that's something to appreciate. The author ends with a prompt to share three good things from their own day, which I think is a great idea. They mention things like the taste of a black olive from a can, the joy of an escalator for grocery carts, and a beautifully written book. I'd love to hear from you. What are three good things that happened to you today? Up next, third from Before It Breaks, the drug built on that Alzheimer's bacteria. A theory failed its human trial. The only human data we have are from a phase 2 trial that gave 643 Alzheimer's patients atazadenstat, a drug designed to block the gingipain enzymes of the gum bacteria, M. P. gingivalis. The study compared two doses against placebo for about a year and found no benefit on cognition or daily functioning, and the FDA halted it because of liver enzyme elevations. The earlier mouse work showed that blocking those enzymes could reduce brain pathology, but mouse results don't predict human outcomes. The original discovery, finding the bacteria, M. and its enzymes in post-mortem Alzheimer's brains, was observational, so it can't prove cause and effect. Chewing massive gum kills the bacterium in a test tube, but there's no evidence it reaches the brain or improves dementia. The gap between in vitro killing and clinical benefit remains unfilled. What the evidence does support is the link between chronic gum disease and higher dementia risk. Good oral hygiene, regular brushing, flossing, and dental care is the only proven, low-cost action you can take right now. And then, fourth, from Vinay Prasad's observations and thoughts. How much NIH funding is waste? The piece starts by pointing out a recent randomized trial that tested giving flu shots to kids before they left the hospital. The study was well-designed, multiple sites, random assignment, but the primary outcome was simply whether the vaccine was administered, not whether it reduced illness or hospital readmissions. Because the trial was powered to detect a difference in vaccination rates, any secondary health outcomes are underpowered and therefore unreliable. From there, the author expands to a broader concern. A sizable share of NIH-funded work never gets replicated. Meta-analyses and surveys of the literature suggest that a large fraction of basic research fails reproducibility checks, a finding famously highlighted by John Ioannidis. When studies are built on fragile methods or overly specific equipment settings, the chance of false or non-generalizable results rises sharply. The article also critiques research that seems driven by political agendas rather than open inquiry. Studies that ask does X reduce Y often have only two acceptable answers, yes or we couldn't measure it, and the framing can bias what gets published. The author argues that funding should not be funneled into projects that reinforce a single ideological perspective, especially when the outcomes are predetermined. In the end, the writer suggests that the cycle of funding booms and cuts will continue unless universities adopt a genuinely pluralistic approach, enforce rigorous methodology, and welcome dissenting voices. Until then, many grant dollars may end up supporting studies that either repeat known findings, fail to replicate, or serve a narrow political narrative rather than advancing robust, unbiased science. Next, fifth from Rue Girl, seared sea scallops with corn and tomato. It's a summer favorite of the author's, who says the sweetness of the corn and the juiciness of the tomatoes pair well with the pan-seared scallops. The author mentions that this dish is especially great when all the ingredients are fresh and in season. Up next, sixth from The Vagenda, tell me about Estra for menopause hormone therapy. I dug into Estra because it's a compounded vaginal estradiol progesterone mix that the company markets for systemic menopause hormone therapy. The key thing to know right away is that it isn't an FDA-approved product. It's a pharmacy compounded formulation, and major guidelines advise against using compounded hormones as first-line therapy because the evidence base is thin and the safety profile is unclear. The company cites over 100 studies on vaginal estrogen, but none of those studies examine the exact recipe Estra uses. There are no pharmacokinetic or clinical trials that show how much of the estradiol or progesterone actually gets into the bloodstream, and the website even contradicts itself on absorption percentages. Without product-specific data, we can't tell whether the claimed blood levels are realistic or safe. Dosing information is fuzzy too. Different pages list varying amounts of estradiol and progesterone per pump, and the language about a certain milligram isn't reassuring for a medication. That inconsistency, combined with the lack of stability data for compounded progesterone, makes it hard to trust the product's reliability. Bottom line, because Estra lacks published safety or efficacy studies, has unclear dosing, and isn't backed by the professional societies that guide menopause hormone therapy, I can't recommend it. Stick with FDA-approved options that have clear evidence and monitoring. That's the read. Small inputs, compounding results. Back tomorrow. If this saved you time, the full feed is free at storyflow.com.